D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you before we get to our next guest. Some sad news to pass along to all of you. Legendary football coach Lou Holtz has died at age 89. Notre Dame just announced that on social media. And Willie, you were telling us that Lou Holtz coached your dad?
He did. Damn. My dad was his... If you want a trivia question, his first ever quarterback coaching the Ravenna Ravens, Ravenna High School JV team, just outside of Kent, Ohio, so in the Cleveland area, mm-hmm. you know, outskirts, Lou Holtz, who was 89, he was only about, 5 years older than my dad, but he was an aspiring coach. He was going, I believe he was a student at Kent State, and he was coaching high school football on the side, and my dad was his quarterback, and he even mentioned my dad in his book, his autobiography. My dad got a real kick out of that. Mm-hmm. He remembered it. He spelled his name right and everything. And my dad ended up going on, and he played a little football and some other sports at Princeton and then transferred after that. But, yeah, Coach Holtz. And I remember when he was the coach at Notre Dame, they came to Vanderbilt to play. And as a young sideline announcer for Vanderbilt Radio, it was my job to interview the opposing coach. And I was so nervous. I was really young, and I was like, oh, can I do that? And I said, do you remember my dad? And he was like, oh, yeah, Joel Donick at Ravenna High School. I mean,
Coach Holtz, loosened it up a little,
yeah,
didn't it?
Whether you liked Notre Dame, didn't like him, liked him. Like, he coached a lot of places besides Notre Dame. But, he was a presence, right, Lou Holtz? So whether you liked him or not, he had a character, a flair for the sport, for sure. Just an iconic coach.
Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Gentry Estes, columnist for the Tennessee. And hello, Gentry, how are you?
I'm good. Good afternoon, guys. Good to be with you.
Of course. Thank you for joining us. So yesterday, you and I bickered a bit on social media about your latest column on the Predators, where you said, quote, the Predators don't have the look of a true contender, but as the NHL trade deadline nears, they do have a shot at playoff hockey. At this point, the franchise and fans calling for the team to sell shouldn't take that for granted. Now, you wrote this before the loss last night in Columbus. You wrote this before the trades of Michael McCarron and Cole Smith. In light of recent events, Gentry, have you changed your tune at all?
No, I mean, they didn't listen to me. I guess we'll say that. I mean, look, I don't have a problem with getting a second and a third round pick for McCarron and Cole Smith. I think you read off the tweet that kind of promoted.
Yes, I
the
did.
Column, the column itself. I think it kind of gets construed as, oh, I don't think they need to sell. Everything's great. I didn't say that. I don't think that. But I will say, you know, Adam, the idea of this gripe about the Predators being chronically, quote, just happy to be there, to me, that in itself is outdated. For one thing, they aren't there anymore. They stunk out loud last season. They're about to miss the playoffs third time in 4 years. They haven't torn it down to the studs, but they have been disassembling and stockpiling draft picks for a little while now. And happy, who's happy? The default setting with the Preds commentary is first sign of fortune's improving even the slightest bit, and you're beaten over the head with skepticism. People like you and me reminding everyone how it's a bad thing because it's never good enough. The only thing left to root for is the failure and the big teardown. And that never changes because it makes sense. The NHL's conditioned everyone to believe that. If you're not one of those teams, then you need to be doing everything in your power to tank to be able to get the players that make you that one of those elite teams. No in between. And look, it's probably true. The Preds do have a long way to go. We all realize that. But everyone, and I'm going to say especially the sports fans in our city lately, could use a break just once from the doom and gloom. To me, this just felt like one of those rare instances to push back and say, you know what, it's okay to enjoy this while it lasts. But, you know, I guess the Preds didn't agree with it. So,
well, all of those points are fair. And to your point, the Predators have turned over the roster significantly over the past few years. But where I come in on this, as you know, as Willie and Derek know, as our listeners know, and you touched on it, is the one thing that's missing is that potential franchise-altering prospect. And really, it's not the only way you can get one of those players, but the best chance you have at getting one of those players is to be bad enough to be in position to hopefully win the draft lottery. And you win the draft lottery in a year where Matthew Schaefer is the number one pick, or Connor McDavid, or Nathan MacKinnon. And that's a lot of if and if and if. My stance on this, which has been my stance on this for several years, is the Predators need to give themselves the chance. They did so last year on accident. That wasn't the plan. They ended up drafting Brady Martin. I just think that where they are right now in the pecking order of the NHL, I don't think it can get any better unless they truly take that step back. So I'm wondering if the trades of McCarron and Smith may signal that maybe they are going to take that step back, depending on what other moves they make between now and Friday.
Yeah, and I mean, and I'll say this, if you are going to start doing it, then follow through with it. You know, if it's just McCarron and Cole Smith, then you may just be punting another season for modest gains that won't move the needle very much, and that's kind of the worst of all of it. So I do agree with you and have for a while from the standpoint of, like, what I argued against here. I understand that it's what I've been arguing for a lot of these years. I think when you look at the Preds and, again, how it works in the NHL, it makes sense that the teams that go through the process of truly rebuilding and tanking and being bad for a long time are eventually going to see the benefit of it because of the high draft picks. Now, I feel like Barry Trotz, you know, a lot of the response I got from this really wasn't about this trade deadline. It was just a greater dissatisfaction with just the direction of everything. And I think what Barry Trotz did, I think he erred by trying to kind of, he tried to have his cake and eat it too, right? He tried to have a foot in both camps. You know, it hasn't worked. But he has consistently sold players, and that's why they have 22 draft picks the next couple of years, or they had it going into this. And it's also a big reason why they were so terrible last season. And it's a big reason why you look at where they're at and say, I don't really see a lot of reasons why it's going to get a lot better in the next couple of years, at least. To me, getting anywhere near the playoffs this season was found money. So from my standpoint on that, to deny your team and fans even a brief glimmer of hope in what was already a pretty bleak time, added to the fact that it might be the final shot for a player like Roman Josi, all just to get a few extra draft picks when you've already got plenty of them, that just didn't feel right to me, even though conventional wisdom in the league says that it is.
Gentry Estes of the Tennessean is with us. Let's switch gears to the NFL draft. My friend Derek Mason here is absolutely smitten with Jeremiah Love as the Titans' selection at number 4. How real do you think their interest is in Love at that spot?
It's a great question, and I wonder it too. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to spend a pick as high as what they have on a running back for obvious reasons. But Jeremiah Love's going to be a good player for somebody. And, guys, I was at the Heisman ceremony this year, and they had all the finalists in the room. I went around and talked to all these guys, and I remember thinking at the time, the guy in this room I want on my team is him. It's Jeremiah Love. He's an impressive guy. He's an impressive running back. And I actually don't think I whoever makes the decision to add that guy, it's not going to be a bad decision. It's going to be a guy who helps your team. It's just from the standpoint of the Titans, they just have so many needs. And, you know, to spend a pick that high on a position that isn't a premium position, that's a pretty big leap.
Gentry.
Derek is slapping his forehead, by the way, as you're answering this question.
Okay, and I do want to talk about the Vanderbilt men's basketball team, but to sort of go off of what you said, 10 years ago, I think you are absolutely right. I think when you make that assessment about that position in regards to being that highly drafted, I think you're spot on. But the NFL has told us that no longer, you know, register here anymore. If you have a transformable player, an elite player, you draft him. And we've seen how running backs within the last, let's say, 5 to 7 years that have been drafted, 10 years, whether it's Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, there are maybe a few others, how they have transformed their team and made their team. Without them, they're not as good. We saw it with Christian McCaffrey in San Fran, as well as Carolina. We saw it with Saquon, and now with Philadelphia. Bijan is doing his thing. I think because the running back position got so undervalued for years that people just all of a sudden just say, you know what, I don't care if it is Jeremiah Love, you can't draft him, because drafting a running back that high, it really doesn't make a lot of sense in regards to you can find a guy that can get you some of that in later rounds.
Right, right. Value over replacement. I mean, that's the issue. But and I'll say, I mean, you named some good ones. I'll see that and raise you Trent Richardson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are instances where it backfired to spend a pick that high. And you can't get that wrong because of the value over replacement argument. I mean, you're talking about a position where you can go get Alvin Kamara in the third round. You can get a lot of good players pretty late in the draft. And again, I feel like with the Titans, it's just the need they have everywhere else. I mean, it's like, what don't they need? At this moment, you could make a case for edge rusher, receiver, any number of other places that they could get better by either spending this pick they have or trading down and trying to get more. It's just running back's a tough sell. I do love Jeremiah Love. I think he's going to be a great player. I don't want to say that otherwise. I really do think that.
Now, switching over to the hardwood, and I talked with Willie about this and Adam yesterday. I talked to Willie today about it. When I'm watching Vanderbilt, the men's team, really good team, but it seems that they're at a point now where they need some rest. They're beat down. Tanner, even though he can do his thing and he has been the last couple, you can just see he needs rest too, because when Miles was out, he had to take the load of the ball handling. Would it be better for Vandy in a situation of it's rest over seeding? Because if they don't get the rest, I'm afraid this team is going to have a early and very early exit in March Madness.
I mean, it's an interesting thing. And for anybody who stayed up and watched that game last night, I'm sorry, because it was a tough watch. I know it was a good game. It was an overtime game. It was exciting. But all the replays and everything.
They've got to do something about that. Goodness. The delays are taking too long.
It was like, it does seem like every year there's at least a few games like that. But I mean, for Vandy's sake, good thing they won it. I mean, you lose that game on the road to his Ole Miss team with a losing record. Things start to get away from you. I feel like, but D-Mix, it's a good point. And when you look at what happened to Vanderbilt last season, they did kind of wear down there at the end. They weren't very good in the SEC tournament. They blew a lead against St. Mary's and were eliminated in the first round. So it is a fair gripe, especially with how the season has played out. I think this is a big game for them on Saturday. They have a chance to go win in Knoxville, if only because the Vols are not going to have Nate Amen, probably. And I feel like if Vandy's able to go win in that building and beat Tennessee to do it, I feel like that's a real shot in the arm when they need it and they need something to go right. To your point, I think perhaps one of the worst things that could happen is if they did make some kind of run at Bridgestone and play three games in 3 days and have to go through that. But I do think this team is better. They just need to kind of find their legs again and, you know, get some confidence, get back to this. They're the kind of team that you usually know within about 5-10 minutes of the game starting what you're going to get. They're either going to jump all over somebody and they're going to play wonderfully, or they're going to struggle. They're going to fall behind. They're going to be in a dogfight. They're going to have to be fighting back, and they've just got to get that confidence back. Early in the season, they were overwhelming people, and it's been a while since they've been able to do that.
Gentry, yes, I agree with you. I feel like they're having to work very hard for what they're getting these days. Their ratings are still good, but I am curious. Gentry, you mentioned it. If they could come out of the shooting slump, and you said you used the word confidence, it looked like a really confident team early that just knew that you can't stop us. We're going to make these shots. And now they're not knocking down quite as many from the outside, and maybe that's hurt their confidence a little bit. But I'm hoping collectively they can come out of it. Like Tyler Nickel, it felt like he couldn't miss a shot earlier in the season, and now – if you look night after night, his percentage has really come down, but he's too good of a shooter to stay down. So that's the kind of thing I think Mark Byington will be hoping for, is they come out collectively of a shooting slump and they start looking like like the team that was at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and I think some of it too is just matchups. They've always been a team that I think they fare better against a team that wants to run with them and try to outscore them. I think Alabama, for example, I think was a good opponent for Vanderbilt for them to want to play their game, whereas I think some of these other teams that have – Ole Miss, some of these plotting teams that have kind of tried to slow them down, they've been able to get Vanderbilt out of their game. I think one of the games early in the year that I think was a bit of a red flag for that was the Memphis game. They won that game, but Vandy played pretty poorly in that one, and it was the first time the season they really had. And – you know, they're going to get in one of these NCAA tournament games, though, with a team that's going to try to slow them down, because I think we've seen now that's how you can be successful against Vanderbilt. If you get out there and let them run and shoot and score and get comfortable, then I think they're a lot more dangerous.
Who do you think is the most dangerous team in the SEC in the tournament, the NCAA tournament?
You know, that's a good question, because – you know, honestly, with a healthy Nate Eamon, I feel like Tennessee was kind of coming on a little more than I would have expected about a month ago. They've started to figure things out a little bit. But I still say, and I've said it all season, and they could go lose in the first round and make this look like a really stupid answer, but Kentucky's still got all kinds of talent. And I wouldn't – they're the kind of team that if they're right and they're playing well, making shots, you know, doing what they want to do – they're capable of beating pretty much anybody because they're not going to get out-talented by most teams. And I don't think the SEC is that kind of conference this year. I feel like you've got a lot of teams that if things are going well, they could be dangerous. But really, if you're talking about talent, somebody that can get out there and really play with anybody, I think you got Kentucky, maybe Arkansas. I think Alabama, but I'm always hesitant with Alabama in this thing because they shoot too many threes, and those teams always seem to find a cold night.
It looks like, and I'm looking at Joe Lunardi's latest thing, there's going to be a lot of SEC teams in the tournament, not as many as last year, but a lot of them are going to be in those 5 to 7, sometimes 8, 9 seeds. And it does, like you said, Gentry, if you watch Kentucky on one night, and last Saturday, they couldn't miss a shot against Vanderbilt. They hit everything, and Vanderbilt couldn't hit a thing. It looked like a mismatch, where it was the complete opposite in Nashville. Kentucky couldn't make a shot. Vanderbilt didn't have Miles and still beat them easily. Game was over at halftime, pretty much. So you've got some Jekyll and Hyde kind of teams. I think Missouri would fit that category. I think Georgia fits that category. So I could see a lot of teams making a run in the tournament. I could see a lot of first round upsets of SEC teams as well.
Yeah, I mean we haven't mentioned Florida, who could be a one or a two.
Yeah, Florida might be the best or biggest upside is what I would have to guess anyway.
But honestly, given what we're talking about, it would not shock me if we're sitting there in the Elite Eight and there are no SEC teams left. Honestly, I just feel like the best teams this year, the SEC they're deep. They're probably the deepest conference in terms of the number of teams that they deserve to have in the field. But they weren't nearly as top-heavy this time. We'll see. I could be wrong.
Gentry Estes of the Tennessean has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Gentry, thank you so much for joining us. We'll catch up soon.
You bet. Take care, guys.
615-737-1025. Let's continue the college basketball conversation. Vanderbilt with an 89-86 overtime win at Ole Miss last night. It wasn't pretty, and I've got plenty of concerns, as do Willie and Derek, about the Commodores as the NCAA tournament near. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.